Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast. Bueno, mi gente, thank you so much for listening today with Hablando La Verdad. This is Christian here with Carlos, and we're coming live with a couple different topics. So, Carlos, why don't you hit it up with something that we want to talk about today?
Man, we just wrapped up a real dope interview, an interview with an important member of the Latino community, specifically within the Boricua community, the founder of the Young Lords organization, a civil rights, a community organization, Jose Chacha Jimenez. And
one of the big things that you'll see throughout the interview is some of the negative connotation that some of the people put out there in regards to what the Young Lords were about and the term gang and the way that it affected the group. So also, you'll hear a couple different things coming from the man itself, how he brought up the organization and how the organization changed into more of a political movement.
Yeah, because it's cool. I mean, I talked to friends of mine who were older members in Latin Kings, who were older members, in his case, the Young Lords, and they explained how these gangs, a lot of the gangs, especially in major cities like Chicago, like L.A., didn't always start with a violent twist to them. And in his case, he broke down how they were broken down by different blocks, and it was really like the street soldiers of the community, and they were just protecting themselves from some of the Italian, the Polish gangs. And you know, when you went from one neighborhood to the other, you better have your little crew with you, or else it was going to be a problem. And so really, it was just a way to protect yourself, protect the neighborhood. And throughout history, we kind of go into and how the shifts started to happen, how the drugs came into the community and really started kind of building. And he helped us understand and maybe break it down for some of the younger generations who are going to listen to this podcast.
And as you listen to the podcast, you're also going to realize that not only was the oppression happening between the different neighborhoods, as soon as they became a political organization, he talks a little bit about how the oppression came from the actual government itself. So it takes it into a whole different route. And last but not least, it talks about the power of the people, que vive el pueblo. And one of the biggest things that we talk about in La Verdad is that we want to speak the truth. So, mi gente, as you listen to this podcast, keep that in mind. Keep an open vision. Hit us up. Talk to us. Email us. Call us. Let us know what you really think about it, you know, because this is an ongoing discussion.
Yeah, and this is one of the early ones. This is really the second interview that it's recorded. Personally, this is my first one that I'm a part of, and it's really what we're trying to do, spread out new messages, help spread out stories of interest, to Latinos, because, you know, Christians, Boricua, I'm Dominican. So things that interest us are kind of by default attached to Latinos, but really it's just interesting stories. That's the end goal of it, right? So right now you'll probably hear a lot about Chicago, these early episodes. You'll hear a lot about Latinos, Boricuas, Dominicans, but in time, as the podcast grows, we want to make it into whatever you all tell us to make it. If you think there's an interesting story and you want to hear about it, you want that little piece of history recorded, just hit us up and you let us know.
And also, mi gente, as you listen to the podcast, I want you guys to actually sit in the room with us and kind of get that vibe going of what's really happening. It's kind of more of chill with us, talk to us. And then eventually, if you have any questions or any concerns or you want to add to the topic, hit us up on Facebook or Instagram. Yeah. Carlos, what's our Facebook?
It's the same name everywhere. La Verdad LTD. So on Instagram, La Verdad LTD. Twitter, La Verdad LTD. We don't got a Snapchat. That might be coming soon. Yeah. We got a Periscope. It's never been used. Probably when this show launches, I'll activate it. That's also La Verdad LTD. And really what we're trying to do here is just build a platform, build a community so that we could spread these good stories. We could, you know, keep promoting, working with each other. Real talk, Christian and I don't even know what it's going to become. We just kind of decided, hey, there's there's this gap here that's not being fulfilled. We both listen to a lot of podcasts, and we just never seen, we never heard, I should say, a show that showed people like us, right, that that we can relate to in the same way, and we're hoping to be one of those voices. Hopefully with time you'll see a lot more coming up.
Yeah, and if I could actually add a little bit to it too, we, the focus of the show that says Hablando la Verdad, and whenever we interview someone, we basically tell them ahead of time, hey, we want you to speak the truth. And as you hear some of our podcasts and as you hear our episodes, you're gonna hear us talking the truth and going deep down into what happened or what's going on. So I think one of the main things that you'll hear in the first couple of podcasts is the history of the Latino community in the urban areas such as Chicago, Detroit, Grand Rapids, New York. But right now we've been focusing a little bit more on Chicago to talk about different things. So with the ability that we had to have Chacha Jimenez join us, you'll definitely hear from the 1950s on and up.
Yeah,
on what was happening in Chicago. So thank you guys once again for listening. Make sure that you subscribe to our podcast, you like and share us on Facebook, and also check us out on our website, laverdadltd.com. Yep. And once again, on behalf of myself and Carlos, we want to say thank you for listening.
And one last thing, subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. You could download us on SoundCloud. Just help keep that movement going. Speak the truth.
And peace. Without further ado, Hablando la Verdad with the Young Lords founder, Chacha Jimenez. Thank you, mi gente, for listening to Hablando La Verdad. We have the pleasure of being in Grand Rapids, Michigan, doing a beautiful interview that's going to give us a little bit of insight of what happened and what's happening in Chicago. My name is Christian, and we have Carlos here, and he's going to introduce our special guest for today.
All right, so I hope everybody's doing real good today. We're real excited here. Christian and I, whenever we sit down and we talk together just as friends for years, one of the big things we talk about is history. You know, what used to go down in Chicago, where he's from. I used to live in New York when I was younger, so I talk about some of that. And when you talk about the history of communities, history of activism, and you're Latino, you're going to bump into the Young Lords at some point. And it's a beautiful story because here you have an organization that was completely transformed by our special guest today. And we're going to learn a little bit, not just about the Young Lords, but also about him. And through that, we're going to learn a little more about just, you know, Chicago in general, Latinos in general, and we're just real excited about this. So without further ado, our guest today is the one, the only, very important man in our comunidad, Jose Chacha Jimenez.
I'm glad to be here, Carlos and Christian. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us. So as Carlos was mentioning, we kind of want to go through a little bit of history, but I want our audience to kind of feel as if they're in the room with us and just kind of we could take our hats off and just relax and just talk about what happened. So to start it off, you know, can you give us a little insight of how it was being a Latino or a Puerto Rican in Chicago when you were growing up?
Well, I mean, you know, my parents, we came, I was born in Puerto Rico, but I came when I was 2 years old with the family. And we kind of came sort of like in the Mexican community where today they're coming in groups of family members. And mm-hmm. That's the same way as the Puerto Ricans came to Chicago. And we settled near downtown, near the factories that were located at that time downtown.
Okay.
And so we wanted to be near the factories. We wanted to be near the hotels. It was what Operation Bootstrap in Puerto Rico, Luis Munoz Marin, was trying to relieve unemployment there. And so he was recruiting people for the factories here, for the corporations here. And that's how we came to the Michigan farms, Indiana farms, the Midwest farms, and New Jersey, the Los Tomateros, they call themselves. And so my father was a tomatero in Boston. And from there, he moved to Chicago, where his brothers and sisters were living at that time, because they came in right during the war. A lot of people came through the war effort also, you know, that's why they where they got there. But we moved on what we call a community that was really Skid Row. It was called La Clark. And then the other community was La Madison, which was another Skid Row. And a lot of Puerto Ricans are kind of ashamed of that, but mm-hmm. we don't have to be ashamed. You know, they were tomateros. They came here mm-hmm. only to make a living and go back. That was yeah. that was the original intention. So they didn't want to pay a lot of money for housing or for rent initially.
Yeah.
I mean, the other Puerto Ricans that followed were middle income mm-hmm. and they had more money and that. But the original ones that came were, you know, were living in places like Skid Row. And they actually cleaned that neighborhood up.
Yeah.
They transformed it into a community and got involved in the churches and started the Caballeros de San Juan and
yeah.
the Daughters of Mary, the Damas yeah. de Maria, and began to set up baseball teams yeah. where the Mexicans today are doing soccer, but then we were doing softball teams.
And talking about Caballero de San Juan, I remember listening to my grandfather who came around the same time as the bootstrap era. And he said that was the only way Puerto Ricans could get loans. You know, the banks will not give you loans. Mm-hmm. So they got the Caballero de San Juan. But for those listening from Chicago, La Clark, and it's kind of, you'll know it nowadays, is the Lincoln Park neighborhood. And Cha-Cha will talk a little bit more about that. Mm-hmm. So kind of just to give you a visual look at where the Puerto Ricans and the Latinos were at in this, in the big Chicago city. So,
so you know, like Clark is Lincoln Park, but it's also just south of Lincoln Park because it's around Chicago Avenue and Clark, that area,
mm-hmm.
and then Lincoln Park starts on North Avenue. But so Old Town, if we look at Old Town, that was like Clark mm-hmm. Before Old Town, and so we got displaced out of there and pushed further north and further west, and you could see it, you know, Chicago and Clark, Division and Clark, and then you go west to Humboldt Park, and that's how those communities were created. Right. It was actually one community, but the expressway was built to divide it right in half.
Oh, okay.
And so a lot of people looked, you know, we got divided there. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, so we're already in a diaspora, but now we're being divided even more. At that time. And so now we move, we get pushed into Old Town and now into Lincoln Park, and we start to settle there and start to really create a strong community. We're from Larrabee Street to Racine and mm-hmm. from North Avenue all the way up to Diversey. Mm-hmm. The whole central of a part of Lincoln Park was Puerto Rican, was Latino. So people don't realize that was our barrio at that time. It was the first large barrio.
And to give our listeners a little bit more of an idea of the what era, what year was this?
Okay, so we're looking at the mid 50s, early 50s, and the 60s.
Okay,
all the way to the end and the early 70s.
Now around this time though, you have that Latino. Is it primarily Puerto Rican and Mexican as well, right?
Actually, you know, at that time, that's what people can't realize that because today the majority of the city of Latinos is Mexican.
Yeah.
Just like in New York, the majority is Dominican.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not clear. But at that time, it was Puerto Rican. I mean, that was the main migration of that area.
And
now, the Mexican community was always around Pilsen.
Yeah,
and that's always like
they're still strong today.
Where they're still strong today.
But when the Puerto Ricans were first arriving there in mass around that time, were there any other communities there? So I know a lot of times the 50s and 60s, to young Latinos today, the first thing we think about is, man, there was a lot of racism, a lot of discrimination. Mm-hmm. Did you guys have to face any of that in Chicago, or how were those experiences?
Well, actually, that's another. You know, we have to get away from the stereotypes. So today we look at gangs as being drug cartels. But at that time, the gangs were actually the soldiers of our community.
Okay.
They were what they call territorial gangs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when we came in, there were the Italians. The city was segregated.
Yeah.
So you had an Italian neighborhood, and if you were Polish, you didn't want to walk in there. It's for sure, if you're a Puerto Rican, you didn't want to walk in the Polish or the Italian area.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But so the city was divided by blocks. Two or three blocks were Italian. Mm-hmm. Two or three blocks were Polish. Two or three blocks were German. A couple blocks were Gypsy. Mm-hmm. You know, and so other areas were African-American. And so you didn't want to walk in certain areas that you did not belong there. Where today, you know, everybody's fighting each other. So, you know, so now it's about, you know, the one gang against another gang. But at that time, all the Latino gangs hung out together.
Okay.
And so we had to defend ourselves because they didn't want us on Clark Street. You know, I mean, the Irish did not want us there, and the Italians did not want us there.
So,
I mean, the Italian neighborhood and around, you're talking about Al Capone and Bugs Moran.
Yeah. Yep.
So you're talking about two gangs that were fighting each other then that today they call them the Mafia.
Yeah. To
but,
us,
but we're really gangs at that time.
Yeah. To us, those are like legendary stories. But you know, to but folks like you, that was your life. That was just the reality.
We were getting beat up by them, by Bugs Moran and Al Capone.
Man.
You know, and their offspring, by their offspring. But we didn't see them as that. We didn't know them as that. You know, you got to understand that some of our parents were involved in. La lotería, the bingo, the numbers, right?
Yeah.
That came from la bolita. Yeah, that came. My father sold la bolita, and women and men sold la bolita. So it wasn't if the Pope would have been here, he would have sold it. I mean, in other words, it wasn't really something criminal. Mm-hmm. It was just a way to make money on the side. Yep. You know, I mean, they played. That legally in Puerto Rico.
You're going to find that wherever there's community being built, especially a lot of communities from Latin America, from other countries, it's just a part of what we do.
My aunt got, you know, one of the oral histories that I did, which we'll talk later about the oral history project, but my aunt and my cousin is still embarrassed and ashamed. I said, you don't have to be ashamed. She got raided because she would have on the weekends just family members over to play La Loteria, which is Spanish bingo. And I'm going like, why should she be rated to play Spanish bingo? Yeah. Why? Because it's Spanish? I mean, you know, but only because it didn't pay taxes, but neither did the churches. They played bingo in church.
A lot of them still do today.
Yeah. Right. So this is what I'm saying. So we were being attacked because of unjust racist laws, and we were being attacked physically by white gangs.
Okay, now
and so we had no choice. Our parents, my father, they joined a group called the Achavijas.
What's that?
The old hatchets.
Yeah,
and they were all mainly family members and or friends of from the same town in Puerto Rico. Yeah. That formed around Clark Street because they were getting beaten up.
Wow.
But, you know, they came when they were 18 and 19. So they were young. So they fought. They got fought them, and then we later on fought the same gangs.
You fought their kids.
Their kids.
Now, could you tell us about the origins, now that we're on that topic of gangs and, you know, how they were those street soldiers of that time and, you know, protectors of the community. Could you tell us about the start of the Young Lords and kind of how, a little bit about that background?
So in Lincoln Park, you had about four or five different gangs, the Paragons, the Black Eagles, the Flaming Arrows, the Imperial Aces in Queens. Later on came the Trojans, and then the Young Lords came out later. And so we were the youngest of all the group, and we were not accepted by, we admired the adult group members, but we were not accepted by
like them. The Latino gangs?
The other Latino gangs in the neighborhood. And again, we were not fighting each other.
Yeah.
So we kind of, admired them, the Black Eagles, especially, and the Paragons, and we wanted to emulate them, but they didn't want us around. So we formed our own group. But we were a little more young, so we were a little, instead of waiting to get attacked, we would go to their neighborhoods and attack them and say, and go like into Benny's Pizzeria and order a pizza. And everybody in the restaurant's going, excuse me, what are you doing in here? We want pizza. Yeah. You like pizza? Yeah. We want pizza. So what I'm saying is, today we hear about civil rights and people being attacked in the South. Mm-hmm. We were being attacked up north. It's just that they didn't call it civil rights. They call us a gang. They called the white ethnic groups social clubs. But we were called gangs, you know, from the very beginning. Yeah. That was racist in itself.
Yeah.
But all we were doing was defending ourselves against the white groups. Of course, later on, as we grew, we became the aggressors. But in the beginning, we were the victims.
Mm. Yeah.
And so you know, but later on it became a phase, and a lot of people went to Vietnam, a lot of people got married, and some people got involved in drugs, substance abuse, including myself or whatever. I mean, that was the ending phase of the gang. And then later on, our younger brothers and sisters became a little, you know, they went to prison. So they came out worse than when they started. And, and they came back to an area unemployed. And then, and of course, we understand why they got into drugs. We don't condone it, but we understand.
What's your fight? And
we worked with them because later on I was a counselor and other people like that too. So, but it was at that time we were a territorial gang, and we were protecting the, and that's how we eventually, because we were a territorial gang, we evolved into a human and civil rights organization later, because we were still doing the same thing, defending our community at a different level.
Yeah, and before jumping into how you evolve and make that transition, I was reading, I was on the National Young Lords, your site, and I was reading some of your background again, just to kind of get a refresher, and, you know, jumped into the Wikipedia a little bit page. And I saw that one of the experiences that led you to decide it was time to transform from that street organization into more of that civil rights, human rights, political aspect was some of your experiences in jail. Could you share with us a little bit about that?
So I got into substance abuse later. I mean, we were in and out of jail all the time because of the gang. In fact, when I was 14, I got put on an airplane in handcuffs.
Wow.
And evicted and sent to Puerto Rico. I mean,
deporting a citizen.
Deported, you know, and sent to Puerto Rico. So, and but that was mainly because I was the known leader at the time. Orlando Davila is the one that founded the gang. And so he was dark-skinned Puerto Rican, and he so he felt discrimination in several ways. And so he's the one that got us together because we were all being chased from school, and he recruited about seven of us, and we started the group. He was never president of the group. He'd never wanted that role, but he was always our leader. I mean, I couldn't become president
unless he approved
it. And I was not the first president. There were six or seven other presidents before me. What happened is that by that time, the group had fallen apart, too. And it didn't help the fact that I had been in jail. So when I came out, I reorganized the group into a political group. But in jail, was your question, I started wanting to stop substance abuse. There were no programs at that time to help people quit. So I kind of used the church or whatever. I started reading books. I got placed in the hole. You know, they said we were trying to escape, and they put me in the hole with some other people, and I had the most time left. So during that time, we had the Mexican. They were rounding up the Mexicans like they do an annual for political publicity promotion. So they're coming through the cell block, and they're being pushed around by African American guards and white guards. And I'm going, hey, these people are not doing anything. You know, I'm calling from the cell block upstairs. There's about four tiers. And I'm saying, why don't you leave these people alone? You know, these people, they don't understand what you're saying. They don't speak English. And you're just pushing them around like they're cattle, you know. So why don't you let me translate? Oh, you just want to get out of your cell? I said, no, I'll translate from the cell. Just let me translate. So I did it, and a couple other people were helping, too, that were there. A couple of my cousin was locked up with me, too. But we were doing it. We were all had our individual cell, but we were doing it from ourselves. We're translating. So the guards kind of had a little, especially the African-American guards, they felt a little more, you know, they could relate, you know, I guess, at that time. So they're coming in, but at the same time, Martin Luther King just got killed, so the African-Americans are coming in, too. And the rioters and stuff like that. And now the police are trying to act like the guards are trying to act like we're with the rioters. And the rioters say, no, you're not. You guys are pigs. You know? So I'm also hearing about the Black Panthers on the radio. And they're taking over the Alameda courthouse. You know, and I'm saying, ooh.
Huey Newton, Bobby Seale.
And so I said, wow. So this is what we need in our community. And I'm reading books about Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Seven Story Mountain, which is a religious book. That was the first one that I read since I had been in eighth grade. So that kind of brought me to tears and brought me to say, you know, I want to change my life and I want to go to confession. And I asked for a priest. And again, they're thinking I just want to get out of the cell. I said, no, I just want to go to confession. Don't you understand? You know, this is what my mother taught me. You know, to confess my sins. She's Catholic. So they said, well, we'll let the priest come up here, right? So I'm thinking that I'm going to be laughed at because all these, you know, inmates and that, they were very respectful, you know, and I was able to go to confession.
Yeah.
I was able to feel better, you know, like you do when you confess mm-hmm. your sins, you're mm-hmm. like cleaned. And so I was able to think about what we need to do with the young lords and change them and you know, help them out. And that, you know, we grew up together. We're very close. I uh-huh. one time I got an awakening while I was in the neighborhood. I brought Orlando to the church because, you know, Orlando and some of the other members of the gang were going to my mother's catechism classes because mm-hmm. my mother was involved in the church. Yeah. Our parents were involved in going door to door in the neighborhood. We learned our organizing from our parents.
Okay. So it goes all the way back to
that goes all the way back to them, yeah, because they organized the whole church. They organized the community.
And which church was this?
This is St. Michael's Church. It was on Cleveland and North Avenue. Mm-hmm. They organized the community. And by the way, that church later on said that there were no Puerto Ricans there. Hmm. So I had an issue with that. But now St. Teresa's wrote a book about us, about the young Lord. So they respect us. But originally they didn't want to accept us. But anyway, so our parents were deep involved in all that organizing. Mm-hmm. And we saw that. We went to First Holy Communion. My mother was able to organize 3 or 4 different catechism classes to receive their First Communion. Mm-hmm. They dressed up in their suits and ties and nice mm-hmm. dresses. And went into the big church for the first time because, you know, the Latinos had to use the hall. They were not allowed in the regular regular church.
Yeah, so. there's a couple of pictures, and like I was mentioning earlier, my grandfather and father, they were around the same era. And I would always ask my dad, like, why are all the pictures like in the basement of the church? Right. Like, oh, well, you know, they didn't have Spanish Mass. Spanish Mass was given either by a deacon or the priest that was mm-hmm. kind enough to have that Spanish Mass in the basement because we weren't basically quote unquote allowed in the big church.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because that's a church that you're talking about, you know. So
because, you know, I found out later because the churches when they you had an Irish church, you had an Italian church, mm-hmm. you had a German church, and St. Michael's was a German church, and we're coming, Puerto Ricans are coming in, and we are not political. We don't have any political base, political strength, and so we're kind of getting the crumbs, you know. And so they said, yeah, you can have your Spanish Mass in the hall.
Wow.
You know, next door, but not in the chapel. We don't want you in the chapel. Mm-hmm. But, you know, eventually they had to as more and more Puerto Ricans moved in and organized.
All right. So you had that awakening within jail and you decided, hey, I'm going to transform the young lords. How did that first meeting go? You came back out, right? And you told them, hey, we're going to switch up the way we work, the way we operate.
Right. So I come out and the first thing I do, I went to Aragon National Laboratory and get a job at an ex-offender place, mm-hmm. you know. So during the day, half a day we go to, you know, get our GED, and the other half a day we were janitors, you know. But we were all ex-gang members, gang members. So I went through that in the beginning because I had a baby, you know, and I'm trying to get my family together. That was another reason that I wanted to change my
life.
This
was the 60s, right?
This was in 1967, or 68, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in the corner and I'm saying, well, I don't want to use hard drugs like heroin or anything like that, but I'll still do a little drinking mm-hmm. and maybe a little weed here. Yeah. You know, I'm trying to change a little bit, but not completely, you know. But, you know, I do want to change.
It's a process. It's all right.
It's a process. And so. But anyway, we're still hanging out in the corner, and I met this lady named Pat Devine, Irish lady, by the way. But they're working with the church, and they've been going to meetings and saying, you know, they're kicking poor people out of this neighborhood, you know. And when I first met her, I'm going like, she insulted my friend, Benny, because Benny was in uniform on leave from the service. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking to him because he's a young lord, you know. He's a Vietnam veteran, and he's a young lord on leave. And this white lady is attacking him, saying, you're killing the Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. I told him, shut up, you white bee. You know what I'm saying? Who the heck are you think you are? You're kicking us out of our neighborhood. And she goes, I'm not kicking, you're a communist. And she says, I'm not kicking you out of your neighborhood, and I'm proud to be a communist. I go, oh, man, this lady is crazy. You know what I'm saying? She's a communist.
Yeah.
So and she's proud of it. I said, so I'm going like, the lady's crazy, but my other friends are going like, shut up, cha-cha, you know, because they're over there trying to get in their pants.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So that, and I'm destroying them. They shut up, cha-cha, yes, you know, they're telling me to shoot. So I go, okay. So anyway, I went in and I talked back to my with my friend Benny Velez, who's a young lord. And then anyway, the guys, they talk, and then they invited us to their house. So we went to their house. We went there. We sat there. And, of course, the guys are still trying to rap and all that other stuff and, you know. But I'm thinking, like, this lady just told me off. You know what I'm saying? I mean, she royally told me off, you know. White lady, and I'm Latino, light skin, but I'm Latino. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we start talking, and we just stay talking, you know, because we stayed there all night talking, me, Benny, and the other people there. But we just stay talking, and she's explaining the situation about urban renewal in the community, mm-hmm. and what they're doing about trying to kick us out, and all that. Mm-hmm. I go, oh, man, this is... Because I'm seeing it in just 2 or 3 months that I'm away, I can see the complete changes. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, our parents at that time, our aunts and uncles were getting their possessions thrown out in the street.
Wow.
You know, yeah. And I mean, we literally saw it. It's not like today they have a few laws. Mm-hmm. Then they just threw it.
Gentrification on steroids.
Yeah, on steroids. Man, they were throwing people's possessions on the street. And then everybody's coming to grab records and TVs and radios and everything.
Wow.
You know, so they're really literally mm-hmm. messing people up, like you said, on steroids. Mm-hmm. So she says, well, they're going to have a meeting on this date. Can you bring people?
Yeah.
Can you bring like 10 people or something? I said, 10 people, man. Do you know who I am? I'm Chacha Jimenez. I can bring you thousands. I'll bring you thousands of people. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And literally, for a gang fight, I probably could have got 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But this was to go to a meeting.
Yeah.
And our people don't go to meetings. You know what I'm saying? So I'm over there trying to beg these people to come to a meeting, and they're making fun of me. They're saying, oh, here comes that cha-cha again and all that. Because by that time, the young lords were kind of dead.
Yeah.
Here comes that cha-cha again. And I'm going to different groups, you know, to their hangouts and their bars and like street quarters.
These are different Latino street organizations, right?
Right. These are street organizations. So this is not, I'm not organizing the churches. I'm organizing at the street corner.
Yeah.
So these people are going, well, you cha-cha this, you know, you're a communist. And I go, I'm a communist? Come on out here and tell me that. So, you know, we will go outside, and they will beat the hell out of me. And then buy me a beer and say, come on inside. But then they will listen. Yeah. So at least, you know, I got them to listen, even though I got beat up you know, a lot. But, it took a while, and later on, half of the young lords still did not believe in the young lords' cause. Mm. So that's what a lot of people think is that it's like that piece of cake. No, half the young lords, we had to fight each other, literally, physically.
Some wanted to stay in the streets.
Some wanted to just hang out in the street, and then when we fought each other, then we agreed.
Yeah.
You know, but there was a coup d'etat. People wanted to take the leadership and all that. Anyway, I was able to get 50 or 60 youth to go by the meeting where we walked to, you know, in fours and fives so the police wouldn't stop us from Armitage and Dayton to Larrabee, which is about 4 or 5 blocks.
Yeah.
And we walked into the urban renewal meeting.
Okay.
And that was the urban renewal office at that time because that was Lincoln Park was the first phase of urban renewal at that time. Yeah. So we walked in there and it was just like a hall. No, offices in the front, in the back, they had the hall. And in the meeting room, maybe there were about 10 or 12 people.
Yeah.
A table, and I mean, totally in the room, there was all over 10 or 12 people except for us. You know, when we walked in and we sat in the back, and we said, we're not going to jump on anybody, so don't jump on nobody because, you know, I mean, we already had agreement on that, you know. Yeah. So we made some rule about not jumping, but I should have told him don't destroy anything too.
Yeah.
but we forgot about that. So what happened is, I didn't know what to say. I mean, this is the first meeting I go to myself. Mm-hmm. But in the before we get there, there's a display with empty spots, empty areas of the neighborhood. Mm. which is the same area where we lived at. See, I said, so interesting. Look, they're going to throw. So I'm acting like I know what I'm talking about. They're going to throw your people out over here, and your family. Isn't this where you live? They're going to throw you out, and you know. So I'm agitating them,
mm-hmm. which is true.
Yeah, which it was true.
It's true, though, yeah.
So I'm agitating them and not realizing, you know, these people are going to get real upset, yeah. but I'm just trying to educate them. Mm-hmm. But to them, I'm agitating them. But anyway, so we walk in the room and I told them, this is it. You know, there's no more meetings going to take place here. You know, because I raised my hand. I said, there's no more meetings going to take place until you have black, poor, white, and Latino representation on your board. There's no more meetings. That's it.
Yeah.
And they looked at me like, are you crazy or something? I go, I'm serious. You want to know how serious I am? I said, I'm serious. You're not going to meet. The meeting's adjourned.
Yeah.
And they're still sounding like I'm crazy. Then the guys kind of, I didn't have to say anything more. The guys started taking chairs and started throwing through the windows. Yeah. And they go into the bathroom and they break all the sinks and pull out all the plumbing. And the place is flooded.
Yeah.
The display gets torn up. And then we all walk out to the front. I tell everybody, go home, because if we go to the neighborhood, mm-hmm. they're going to pick us up.
They're waiting for you.
Yeah. You know, so everybody went home, right? So that nobody got arrested. The next day, everybody's giving each other five. It was like a victory.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So then after that, we do what they call an organized riot. Mm-hmm. So now we want to tell the neighborhood, those new stores that say Old Town this and Old Town pub, anything that said Old Town on it, because we had come from Old Town. We got kicked out of Old Town.
Yeah.
So that reminded us, now they got new stores in the area called Old Town. So that said anything with that on it, it's got to go. Mm-hmm. So we had the Vietnam veterans, and everybody synchronized their watches. Everybody got a window from Racine to Larrabee. That's like 10 blocks.
Yeah.
Everybody got a window, and the place went down, except for the Latino businesses.
You didn't touch those.
We didn't touch those. But all the other businesses, because they were saying that in riots, where people were just destroying their own neighborhood. We said, no, we're not destroying our people.
Yeah.
So the next day, we're giving each other five, and the businesses,
the Latino businesses are
giving each other
took
five.
Took down the competition.
Yeah. So that was kind of the beginning. And, of course, we occupied a few buildings. But then what we did was when the police, because later on I started getting arrested. I got like 18 cases in a six-week period, all felonies. Wow.
They knew you were the leader.
So they knew they wanted to target the leaders.
Yeah.
That's what they wanted. So then after that, we occupied McCormick's Seminary. We took over Augustana Hospital. Well, no, we sat in at Augustana Hospital.
Okay.
Took over Grant Hospital. We took over People's Church. Mm-hmm. We took over People's Park. But then we said, you know what? What we need to do is our people have not gone through civil rights. Mm-hmm. And the police are after us anyway.
Yeah.
So why don't we do demonstrations? And so we held the largest demonstrations at that time.
Wow.
I mean, our demonstrations were no less than 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. And these were like 10,000. And then later on when Harold Washington in 1983 won, we had at Humboldt Park, we had 100,000 people.
Wow.
And I was the only one on stage introducing Harold Washington, the new mayor, because I was the Northside Hispanic
organizer.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Luis Gutierrez was one of our workers, and now he's the congressman at that mm-hmm. time. So we kind of opened the door for the political leaders, but they forgot what they were there for. They, you know, we told them later, you know, are you for Mayor Daley or are you for the people? That's the simple question you got to ask yourself when you run for office.
Yeah.
I think, is this for Mayor Daley or is this for the people? Because Mayor Daley is the one that evicted you from your home.
Because listeners who aren't from Chicago or who at least don't know about Chicago politics, it's known to be corrupt. It's known to be a very powerful. The Daley machine.
Exactly.
Right. So if you weren't for him, it didn't matter whether you were black, white, Latino. They were coming for you, mm-hmm. and they had different arms of power. Right. So they were the political. They had the police behind them. They had community organizations behind them, and so going against them and those actions that the Young Lords were doing it, and some of the other allies and organizations, you know, like the Panthers, like the Young Patriots that you worked with. It was very revolutionary at the time because you have kids from the hood, from the barrio, from poor neighborhoods saying, you know what, enough is enough. If our politicians aren't doing it, we're going to take that power ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's a major lesson that younger people today are have started to duplicate again, especially in the last couple of years.
Exactly. You said a wonderful word, their power. So one of the slogans that we use in the we learned from the Panthers was power to the people. And so we said, que viva el pueblo, long live the people, but it meant the same thing. But I organized, but that simple little statement means what, that was our mission. That's what we were trying to do, was bring power to the community, power to the people, empower the neighborhoods. And so, and that's why we supported self-determination for Puerto Rico, because it was about empowering our people again to take over their, to retake over their nation that was that is a colony today.
Yes, sir.
One of the things that we worked with was with the Black Panther Party and the Young Patriots and in a Rainbow Coalition. So Fred Hampton, well, they had they were working with the Young Patriots and in the North Side, and now what happened is that we went to the Chicago Avenue Police Station. They told us that they were having a police community workshop meeting with seniors. And they were telling the seniors that the police was going to protect them from the Young Lords gang, you know, and we're saying gang, you know, they keep calling us a gang. So we need to correct that. So we had a bus, a school bus driver that lived in the same block, and he had his bus parked by his house. So we said, you know, can we use your bus, you know? So, you know, we loaded up the bus, we loaded up cars, and we had our purple berets, but we put our purple berets in our coat. We walked into the police station and walked upstairs to the second floor to the meeting where they had a hall, you know, for the community meetings. And we barricaded all the doors. The media's inside there. You know, we're not thinking that, you know, this is a hostage situation. But we're not thinking that. We barricaded ourselves inside the police station hall with the commander inside and his assistants. And then I kind of pushed them to the side. And there's a picture of it at DePaul University. They have it in their newspaper, so people can can access that. All they have to do is say Young Lords newspapers on the internet, and they can find those pictures. But we pushed the commander aside, and I started speaking to the people, and told them that you know they're invited to come to the People's Church at any time that they want. That we were there to serve them, and so therefore would be our guests and welcome. We are not against anybody. We're not, you know, we're for promoting Latinos' human rights, but we're not racist. You know, we're for everybody. You know, so we pointed that out, and then we opened the door and left, and they were stunned. They didn't know what. But the next day it was on the front page, and so the Panthers were organizing underground. See, we didn't have the luxury of organizing underground. We started right from the street corner. But they were able to organize underground. They came and they saw us. Fred Hampton came, and I remember I was in an apartment. And they told him, Chaz's up there, the Panthers. You know, they already knew about the Panthers.
Did you guys meet in person?
So we met in person, and he says, well, you know, we got this. We're trying to get this coalition together. They don't like us, and they don't like you, and you're definitely in trouble because you don't know what you guys did. And I said, well, what did we do? What said you walked in a police station? You know, you took over a police station. You sat in it. They're going to kill you. So then we started realizing, you know what? Maybe that is what they're going to do. So, you know, we decided that we would join together with the Rainbow Coalition. And nobody, it was not an organization, but it was a freestanding coalition. And so no one told each other whatever. Our job was to organize the Latinos.
Yeah.
Their job was to organize African-Americans and the Young Patriots. Was the poor white
people. Now what were some of the services that people could get when they went to the People's Church?
Okay, so we had all these programs that we learned from the Panthers and some that we organized ourselves. So we had a free breakfast for children program with crossing guards every morning. So we crossed the kids so they make sure that, you know, they didn't run into the street trying to get food. So we fed them every morning. They sang songs, Que Bonita Bandera, La Bandera Puerto Riqueña, you know, different things like that. We had a free health clinic that we set up. One of the things that the Panthers did not do and that we did was a free community daycare center that we had that the women of the group did. You know, a lot of the work was done by the women of the group. And we had a group that that's not doesn't sound politically correct. Excuse me. Does not sound politically correct because they were called the Young Lordettes.
Okay.
But they were like, you know, they were just like at that time that most of the groups were formed that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so they changed with us too. As we transformed, they transformed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that really kept the police away from us because they were more family oriented.
Yeah.
Because they're mothers, their parents, you know, and so they, you know, we had, there was, we had to maintain that, that family respect, that family dignity. Mm-hmm. And so they helped to organize the Breakfast for Children program, the clinic, and the daycare center. And they brought in more people in the community. I mean, we were hard to get rid of, and we were hard to infiltrate because we grew up together. We were compadres and comadres and all family. That stuff, family. So we knew each other from birth, practically. And it was hard to infiltrate us like they did Panthers and some other groups that were recruiting students from different universities that they didn't know. We knew everybody that was around us and stuff like that.
I'm real glad you said that because oftentimes when people talk about, you know, political movements and a lot of these organizations in the 60s and 70s, often the women are left behind. And in the public, it's painted as a movement just by men. And, you know, what were the women? They were just as active with it.
Mm-hmm.
But you also just mentioned something else that caught my mind, how some of the organizations were pulling from the universities while the Young Lords were specifically from the streets, from the barrios.
Exactly.
When the Young Lords started growing and you have other folks who want to come in who weren't part of that barrio, who weren't part of the community, right? Be it in Chicago or maybe when you started expanding out to New York or other places. Did that cause any friction, right? Latinos organizing from a street level versus those who started maybe at a university level? Was that ever a difference?
Well, you know, one of the things that the Young Lords were attracted to the Panthers, and I was attracted to the Panthers, was that they wanted to organize the lumpen proletariat. And the lumpen proletariat are in the street.
Yeah.
They're street people, people from the neighborhoods. And so that's why, you know, they were speaking to us because we were from the streets and that. So we, of course, expanded to the universities and to other places, but our leadership in Chicago was always the street.
Okay.
Street folks were the leaders. And a lot of people feel, you know, my mother never went to school, but she was speaking. She never went to school at all, but she was speaking for the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that organized the Catholic Church and all that stuff that was going on there. And so we did the same thing with the Young Lords. A lot of us only went to eighth grade in that.
Mm-hmm.
But then we were the ones organizing the community because everybody else was for the beautification of the neighborhood. And we're going like, it's not for us. You know, they're beautifying the neighborhood, but it's, you're not going to live there. So, you know, we were the only ones that understood that they were trying to get rid of us. And so we began to open people's eyes in that. Mm-hmm. And so we're very proud of all the other chapters that came later. And a lot of them were students, led by students. But we're saying, you know, we're not going to change a community if it's led by students. It should be led by the people themselves.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Because then, you know, the change starts from within.
Yeah, and the passion.
So
if
the people start changing themselves, then the community changes.
And that passion as well. Like, it comes from the heart. You know, you know what it is, the struggle. You know what it is to be there and in the community. So, I identify with that as well because I'm from Chicago. I'm from the actual neighborhoods. I still live in the neighborhood. So whenever I take on a stance, whether it's political or community-based, I have a passion behind it. And it's like, it's that blood starts boiling because you feel it and you know what it is to go through that. So I identify with that a lot as well.
I think that's why it's important. Because, I mean, it's about the street. This is about, you know, empowering the people in the neighborhood, the grassroots people. And so all of us, you know, today I'm in college and that. So all of us that learn skills and that, our skills should be in to support
back
the community. And to uplift them, not to lead them, but to uplift them, you know, and to work side by side them.
So was there ever a point in the Young Lords organization where, like you mentioned, there was a time where leaders that came from college were starting to become leaders in the organization? Was there ever a point where they were clashing, the guys that started it?
The thing that I left the most, and I learned this from Marcos Munoz, who was in the farm workers movement.
Mm-hmm.
And he never went to school, but he was a Midwest organizer.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that from him. He says, you know, Chacha, don't, you know, you got to slow down, you know, because he says I was a little ego tripper. So he says, you got to slow down, Chacha. You got to pretend like you don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. I know you know what you're talking about, but you got to be humble and pretend like you don't know. And I said, well, I beg to differ with you, but I'll listen to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And you know, he was correct, though. He's saying that a lot of people try to patronize us and try to think that we don't know what we're doing, but we're talking to our own people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're the experts because we're talking to our own people, but they think that you got to have all these skills and all that other stuff to talk to your mother and father. You don't need the skills.
No.
And so that was the beauty of the Young Lords. We were organizing our own people, and we were the experts.
Yeah.
Okay. And so we welcome the students to work with the students to bring us more support, you know, but don't come and patronize us. That's not correct. Just like we wouldn't do too good of a job with students.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's really the basis of it. It's the same concept of the Rainbow Coalition.
Uh-huh.
Well, the Rainbow Coalition concept was if you're Italian, work with the Italians. If you're Polish, work with the Polish. If you're Puerto Rican, work with the Puerto Ricans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or Latinos. You know what I'm saying?
There's a lot of work to do in all our neighborhoods.
Right. There's a lot of work. You know, we're all working for the same cause. Let's just work with our people. Let's just work with wherever you're at.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not that you have to be divided.
Just understand your role.
But understand your role
in each community. And I think that's important even today. Now, again, back on that same theme of the Young Lords growing and expanding, oftentimes I hear about the New York Young Lords, the Chicago Young Lords. And so I guess what I'm curious about is whether Young Lords chapters in other places outside of those two locations, and maybe along with that, how was that process? Did it change any dynamics when the growth started happening and maybe less control happened at the neighborhood level?
You know, what people fail to realize that, for example, in the Young Lords, there were like three branches of the Young Lords that came together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what happened is we, you know, through the Panther newspaper, we became known. Mm-hmm. That helped us get known. We were already known in Chicago, but through the Panther newspaper, we became known in other cities.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so other cities, they were doing their little organizing too, but they kind of adopted the principles and the models of the Young Lords. And like I said, in New York, they had three different groups. They had two on the street and one in the college.
Okay.
But again, the college ones, because they had a little more skills, kind of took over the organization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I said, well, you know, that's not really correct. You know, you should let the street people train them.
Okay.
But anyway, so that the number that they throw out is like 27 chapters nationwide that form. But it could have been more or less. But it's a model that's still there today. I mean, it's still expanding into different areas. So they kind of, some people call themselves former Young Lords. I'm going like, you should follow the model of the Young Lords. Once you're in the gang, you don't leave the gang. Once you're in the Young Lords, you should not leave the Young Lords because we haven't freed Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Yet, so that's our mission. Our mission was to free Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't done that. Our mission was to empower the Latinos. We haven't done that.
Yeah.
So how can we be former? Former means you quit. And, you know, just say that you're tired. Mm-hmm. You can
take a break.
Take a break, and that's fine, but don't say you quit.
Yeah.
You know, we have a lot of work to do. I mean, that's the thing.
Mm-hmm. And talking a little bit about Puerto Rico, and I was telling you, we were talking before this interview a little bit, and I was letting them know about some of the Young Lords buttons that I have at home and whatnot. And one of the buttons says, Tengo Puerto Rico en mi corazón. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you know, Ralph Rivera, who passed away, and myself, we did that button. We modeled that button. Ralph was in Puerto Rico. And that button came from the tax collectors in Puerto Rico. But he was there, and he was coming back to Chicago as a Young Lord. And we didn't have that news from Puerto Rico or anything like that. So he's coming back. All I knew was word of mouth. So he's coming back and says, "Yeah, man, at the university, they tearing it down and they're, you know, they're doing this and that." And you know, right at the same time, I'm organizing in Chicago, so I'm very interested.
Yeah.
And so he's helping out, you know, because he's a young lord too, and he's saying all this stuff going anyway. We're, one day we kind of designed it, and I took it to the Green Duck Button Company on Water Street in Chicago, and they made the first buttons.
Yeah.
And we tried to sell them, but we just ended up giving them away. Everybody was happy to wear them, and they wore them every day.
Mm-hmm.
But then the police were after them for that, you know.
Yeah.
And were arresting people just for wearing the buttons, you know. Yeah. So we had the first ones were like 1,000 of them, and they, I mean, they went like that. So you got 1,000 people wearing our buttons. They're spreading. They're, that helped to spread us.
And spread I'm us trying out. To remember.
And in 83, when I introduced the mirror, there were 100,000 people. Mm-hmm. We gave out 30,000 buttons.
Yeah, I think it might have been around that yeah. time because it, with, I was trying to remember.
With the breaking of the chains?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the ones that we gave out in 83.
Wow. So we I have history 30, in my house.
Got history.
I got some history there.
30,000 buttons. The original one is in the website.
And we'll, I'll take a picture of that button, too. And for those that are listening, I'll try to somehow put it in a link or something so you guys can see what button we're talking about. But it's definitely, I didn't know it was a piece of history. I remember being a kid, and the button was always in my house. My dad always has it, like, a big collection of a bunch of different Puerto Rico stuff because we've always grew up like that, right? And then not until I started, you know, getting a little bit older, I would say like around 18 or 19, I started to really look into who the young lords were and the Albizu Campos and everything that happened in Puerto Rico. And then I go downstairs and I'm like, man, this button looks really familiar and it's a piece of history in my house for God knows how long.
And that was has PRDC on it.
Yes, it does.
And PRDC stands for Puerto Rican Diaspora Coalition.
Wow. Okay.
It's an organization that we organized during the Harold Washington campaign. Wow. So we reorganized. We couldn't use the young lords because at that time it was a flood of gangs.
Yeah.
And they were related to drug cartels.
Yeah, at that time.
So we couldn't use the young lords' name. We had to change our name. You know, we had to not change it, but we couldn't use it. So we used PRDC. And it was also like a message. PR, we got to go to DC to free Puerto Rico.
Now,
so that's what we were trying to say. Exactly. That's PRDC. That's the
I'm button. Over here showing Chacha. I have it on my Instagram, and I'll definitely put it on La Verdad Instagram so you guys can see it.
La Verdad LTD.
We gave 30,000 of those buttons, and they were I'm sitting in the L trains, and I'm watching these people wearing these buttons, and I'm going like, "Well, this is great." For 2 weeks later, they were all wearing them.
And when you look at that Young Lords logo, a lot of people will get scared or turned off by it when they see that hand holding up the rifle.
Okay.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and how?
It's a symbol. I mean, the United States Army, they promote, right? We're not promoting rifle with that. What we mean by that is we're promoting to defend your own country, your own nation.
Yes.
By whatever means necessary that we need it. And what that means is that we should exhaust any means that we can.
To achieve that goal.
To achieve that goal. That doesn't mean that we're promoting guns or anything like that. We're promoting defense, to defend our own selves against colonialism.
Yep.
We're colonized victims. Yes. And so we're saying we got to defend ourselves through education, through whatever means that are available, through the church, through the street, organizing at the street level, organizing a softball team, whatever way that we can promote our nation. That's what we need to be doing. Yes.
And taking care of our own as well. Yeah. You know? And with Chicago, being started in Chicago, how did it move over to New York? Because I know we hear a lot about the New York chapter, which is why we're highlighting the Chicago one so that we could get the
foundation.
Exactly. So how did it get all the way up there?
So there was a guy named Martinez is what they wrote. They came and met with me, and I gave him permission to set up. You know, people would ask me, can we organize? Of course, that's what we want.
Yeah.
This is what we wanted. We wanted to spread the movement because our mission is to free Puerto Rico. We can't free Puerto Rico in Chicago alone.
Yeah.
You know, we need New York. We need, and New York is where 80 to 90% of the Puerto Ricans came through. I came through New York.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I came through New York with my mother. You know, she had to stop there to go to Boston.
Yep.
So, you know, that's where 80 to 90% of the people came through New York. So we were hoping that our leaders in New York would help this little gang in Chicago that was trying to free Puerto Rico. But if, like everybody else, we get a little selfish.
Yeah.
And so then we, you know, and it's okay because I'm selfish too, but we, you know, we get a little selfish. And we forget the mission. And the mission is to free Puerto Rico. And so they should have supported us because we were being attacked by COINTELPRO.
Yeah.
You know, we're being attacked. We, you know, we're,
can,
we,
can
we're
you elaborate on that a little more? Tough for the folks who don't know about so that, what it is.
So, you know, let's that's very important because Chicago really had, you know, we had Reverend Bruce Johnson and Eugenia Johnson, the, a pastor from the United Methodist Church.
That's the People's Church.
The People's today. Church that we took over. But the reason that we were able to succeed was because he supported us against his own congregation. Mm. His congregation was Cubans that were exiled and that didn't like Fidel Castro. And we had pictures of Che Guevara on the church walls. So they didn't want us there. But he stood with us. And eventually they killed him for it. We know that he was killed. We don't know who killed him, but we know he was killed at that time. I was in jail, and the bishop prior bonded me out of jail for the service. So I came right out of jail just to give the service.
Wow.
And he is clear in all the documents that he was one of our main supporters. Yeah. He was part of the Northside Cooperative Ministry, which is a group of pastors that were supporting the Young Lords.
Yeah.
Because that church had no money. So it had to get money from the suburbs. So the alderman, McCutcheon, and a group called Uptight United People to Inform Good Doers, which was really a group of the Lincoln Park Neighborhood Association.
Yeah.
They were going through our garbage cans, dressed as hobos, looking for anything that they can use against us to go to the suburban churches and tell them. They found a letter of some girl that was writing me that the letter wasn't even open. It was thrown in the garbage.
Yeah.
Because she had a substance abuse problem. I didn't want to be with her.
Yeah.
But she was writing me saying, "Oh, I love you. You're, you know, all this other stuff."
Yeah.
Her name was Loca. I respect Loca. You know, there's nothing against her. But she was just writing. They found a letter about her, and they opened it and published that and put it through the suburban churches.
Wow.
And said, "This is who you're supporting, a drug addict," and all that stuff. Well, you know, once I stopped, once I joined the Young Lords, I stopped using substance abuse. I had a substance abuse problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In fact, later on, I became a substance abuse counselor. I was a senior. I am licensed in Michigan. I was a senior counselor.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at the Holland Drug Court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I work in the drug court.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm a certified counselor. But and I've been clean for almost 30 years.
Okay.
You know, I don't even smoke cigarettes. Yeah, thank you. I don't even smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
So, what I'm saying, so definitely we're not for substance abuse, but that was an issue that they used.
Yeah.
The police even used that on our members.
Huh.
So they flooded the neighborhood like they did in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
They flooded the neighborhood to try to destroy the Young Lords movement in their neighborhood. That's how strong of a base we had because we went door to door.
Yeah.
So we had our lead poisoning testing program and we went door to door. We had our clinic. So we went door to door. You know, we had full support of the businesses, of everyone in the community. But they murdered Reverend Bruce Johnson. They stabbed him 18 or 19 times and his wife 9 times.
They got Fred Hampton.
Wow.
They murdered Fred Hampton 2 months later.
Wow, I didn't know it was that close.
Yeah, it was two months later.
Wow.
And so at that time, too, the left, the new left activists, everything to them was just a black and white thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't realize that Latinos, you know, and other poor oppressed people were facing the same situation. And so they and then the fact that they kept calling us a gang.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually abandoned us. I hate to say that, but they abandoned
the left.
The left.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were left alone and stranded and we had to go underground. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Sorry, bud.
It's all right. While you drink some water, it's true. even progressives today. Oftentimes, white progressives don't always have the understanding to work with our communities. And so it's important for them to allow us to lead when they're coming to work in, within black and brown communities. And when you lack that understanding, that's when you start accepting false narratives like, hey, that's just a gang. It's just a bunch of drug dealers. Anyone from the community knew what the real deal was. But through that misinformation campaign, a lot of those people who claim to want to do good and who, you know, probably had a good heart, fall for those tricks. And you can still see it happening in different ways today with a lot of good leaders.
Well, I mean, you know, today, when you talk about the Panthers, and don't mention the Panthers and say, well, you know, that they had, and they need to do that. We need to do that because the Panthers were attacked more than we were.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is the white left will mention the Panthers, but they don't mention the fact that there was a rainbow coalition and we were connected.
Mm-hmm.
So then not only did they go after the Panthers, they went after us. You know, and they went after the Young Patriots, poor white group.
Yeah.
So, you know, they went after us heavy. And so our whole central committee went to Tolman, Wisconsin. And we rented a farm there, and we lived there for a year, a little bit over a year together. Not as hippies, but, you know, we had regular, because at that time they had hippie commune, but we didn't believe in that. So we had a disciplined training school. Well, we got up in the morning, everybody had chores to do.
Yeah.
And I was in underground, you know, and we were organizing that. And that was to train leaders, because when I knew that I had to come back and turn myself in and do a year and still fight 18 cases.
Hmm.
So I'm doing a year while I'm in. After I finished the year, I still had to get bonded out of jail for the other cases. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they wouldn't even though I finished my year, they wouldn't let me out. So, you know, it wasn't me they were attacking. They were attacking the group, the movement group, and that. They weren't attacking Reverend Bruce Johnson or his wife. They were attacking the Young Lords and the movement group. And so today they knocked down the People's Church.
Wow.
And that was the last remaining symbol. That was his church.
Yeah.
And they knocked that down. And so that's why we're promoting that. It's not the right word, promoting. He's a martyr, a modern-day martyr of the United Methodist Church. And we need to not let that be forgotten. I mean, that's what we're trying to do.
We have to make sure that their own religious home respects them as such also.
Exactly. We want them to know that. The Methodists should know that.
Yeah.
They have a leader among them. They need to know that, modern-day martyr.
But were you going to say something?
Yeah, and one of the biggest things that I take out of that is that, you know, we hear this a lot in the media. It's that the Latino population is the sleeping giant, you know, and that's a testament right there that the Young Lords, you know, some people might have seen it as a small group or quote-unquote a gang, but it was that powerful that they needed to do something in order for it to stop, you know, or they were that scared of us, you know. And that's a big thing for those that are listening, is that we definitely have power.
we have power. And then, you know, they want to negate the history, the true history of the Young Lords, mm-hmm. because some of our own people are ashamed of us,
mm-hmm.
because, we don't want to be related connected to a gang. Or whatever, you know, we should not be ashamed of where we came from.
Yeah.
This is like I said, when we moved to Chicago, we lived in Skid Row.
Mm-hmm.
We should not be ashamed of that. Yeah. This is what our people had to go through. Not only discrimination, they had to live in the worst part of the city just to survive. We should not be ashamed of that. They should be ashamed of that. Mm-hmm. The government, not us. They're the ones that put us... You know, the master should be ashamed, not the field person.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, this is what Malcolm X was saying, right? They wanna make us be ashamed of who we are, or they wanna blame the victim for what the victimizer does. You know,
exactly. So, I mean,
you know.
Yeah. So, when you create the conditions, you can't be super surprised at the result. Because you helped cause it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our neighborhoods are flooded with crack cocaine in the 80s. You have mass incarceration put down as policy within the United States. And that's why today you have so many people in jail. You have so many people who were, you know, what they call the crack baby generation. And those actions taken in the 80s are still being felt today, right? Those things that were done in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you still see a generation. So that cycle was created intentionally, right? It's to a certain extent, oftentimes people like to say, hey, that's a conspiracy theory, so that doesn't really happen. But today there's enough information where we know what happened. So it doesn't have to be made into a fairy tale. We can say, hey, these are some of the things the government did, right? The Iran-Contra affair, right? We can look at policies, politics, and see these are some of the laws that were put in place in the 90s. So you create this whole generation. You're taking fathers out of the houses with mass incarceration. And that's where you see, I mean, again, back to Chicago, it's got one of the most highest violence rates, one of the highest murder rates you're going to find in the entire United States. So do you have any advice, any sort of suggestions for not just young Latinos, but maybe young, poor, oppressed people today who are coming from the hood, from the streets? And how do you think that we should approach them to maybe help recreate some of these positive aspects from your generation?
Okay, so you mentioned a couple of things first that I wanted to touch on.
Yeah, go right ahead.
So you're talking about the hood, and you're talking about here the Panthers, the Young Lords, the Patriots, and other groups,
yes,
Rising Up Angry, and other groups were doing some community organizing at that time at the grassroots level. And so the police comes in and they divide the gangs into folks and people.
Yeah.
You know, so we were saying power today to the people, and now, you know, the police come in and help the gangs promote folks. So now they're dividing the body.
I didn't make that connection. Yeah.
No, we saw it, and you know, we were able to work with both sides at that time, but they were attacking us at the same time to try to destroy us. Because they want to keep those divisions. That's the way they. I mean, this is planned. They want, yeah, this is a military operation, what they were doing.
In our neighborhoods.
So you know, they're just like in the COINTELPRO was dividing families. They're sending letters to the spouses to try to divide them. And,
some,
you know,
real, some fake.
I was reading an article the other day, so I didn't put two and two together till the other day. We had a car parked 24 hours a day in front of the People's Church on this side, on the right side in front of the church. Behind the church, there was a made-up group called the Comancheros who wore purple berets. They wore blue berets. And they were not Puerto Rican, you know, but it was a Puerto Rican neighborhood. But a couple of them were Puerto Ricans. Some of them had been Young Lords, a couple of them. So we knew them. So we kind of didn't bother them that much. But they had they were in an apartment right behind the church where they can climb from one window into the church, and it was okay with us because we thought we knew them. But the majority, we were suspicious. We say these look like pigs. They look like police.
Yeah.
So we have the police on one side, and them on the other. Then we find out that they were able to do surveillance through the phone. We were getting building inspectors, fire inspectors come in to check the wiring.
They would tap.
So they were tapping our phones. Wow. And they could listen. You know, you don't need the phone to be off the hook. So they could be listening to every conversation going on in the church at
that
time.
Even though the phone was just kind of laying down normal.
And so those files are now at the Chicago History Museum.
Wow.
Because we're looking into those files right now. So they were, here we thought. And then another time, the Justice Department comes in there, and I go, "Who are you guys?" I even talked to them personally. "Oh, we're from the Justice Department. We're here to help you." Well, I read later, I found out that the Justice Department is the police, you know, the FBI. But at that time, I thought they were really helping us.
Not were you?
So, you know, they're interviewing our members who are hanging out outside, because they're still hanging out outside. Some of our, you know, I mean, we got people from the street.
Yeah.
So they're interviewing the people from the street. They got a police car changing the shift in front of our church parked, listening to everything that's going on in the church. And then they got these other spies on the other side. So we're surrounded, and all we're trying to do is feed children.
Yes.
Is trying to fight for social justice. Mm-hmm. We're not doing, you know, we're going to demonstrations, and they're putting provocateurs at the demonstrations to create riots. Well, we're trying to do it nonviolently because we stopped doing the occupations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we said we're going to do the civil rights. We're going to do the nonviolent. So we're doing nonviolent demonstrations, but they got people. You know, I went to jail with Fred Hampton two or three times, and he came to support us. Mm-hmm. And LADO, Latin American Defense Organization, we were trying to set up a welfare union.
Wow.
So he got arrested, and I got arrested, and so did Obed Lopez from LADO twice mm-hmm. for mob action before the demonstration.
Stay closer to the mic.
Mob action before the demonstration. Yeah. How can you get arrested for mob action and the demonstration?
Just stay how you were. It's just not
the demonstration. The demonstration hadn't even started yet.
Yeah.
So I mean, these are the kind of stuff that they were doing. They were harassing. We couldn't. Anybody that was wearing our button was getting harassed. They were interviewing people. We were in police training films. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the police told us, you know, we saw you in the training film.
So it automatically criminalizes the group in their eyes when you're used as an example in their training. I've talked to some older members of the Black Panthers from Oakland, actually, who I had a professor who was a member.
Okay.
And she explained how they were doing the exact same thing in Oakland, in L.A., that they were doing the same thing to the Panthers and to a lot of just the civil rights organizations, creating the divisions from that federal level all the way down to the local level.
Right.
But back to that question from earlier, do you have any advice or maybe any thoughts to those younger Latinos, people of color, poor people on what they might be able to do to maybe reclaim and live out what essentially is their heritage, right? Here in the U.S. as young Latinos, as young poor people, of proletariat.
Our philosophy was very simple. We wanted self-determination for Puerto Rico, all Latin American nations, and all oppressed nations of the world. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to empower our neighborhoods, which is also self-determination.
Yeah.
So what we're looking for, like the Panthers say, power to the people. We say, viva el pueblo. And what we're looking for is to empower our neighborhoods. And so, you know, we need to prepare ourselves. We need to it's not about what we know, but it's what the people know. Yes. So we got to raise their level of consciousness every day. And that's all we're trying to do is educate the masses in that way. And so the advice is to, you know, organize. We know how to organize. If you can organize a birthday party, exactly. you can organize a block party or a block club. And so we're already trained. We know how to do it. We just need to be clear on what it is that we're trying to do. And it's about uniting. The people united will never be defeated. You know, that's a mm-hmm. simple statement, but that's our goal. I mean, it's here to unite people. The last few decades, it's really amazing what people are so confused that they don't understand that's the simple message. They're trying to, New York is better than Chicago. Chicago is better than Atlanta. You know, this is not even about Chicago, Atlanta, or New York. Yeah. It's about Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about none of that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about we're trying to free Puerto Rico here. Mm-hmm. And New York can't do it alone. Chicago can't do it alone.
Yeah.
And so we're all young lords. We're trying to unite. You know, the COINTELPRO wants to destroy the Black Panther Party. Mm-hmm. They want to destroy the young lords and the young patriots and groups like that. Our goal should be the opposite. Our goal should be to unite them, to empower them. Yep. Not to say we're former, but to say we're leading. We're mm-hmm. still here. We're not going nowhere.
Yeah.
We're going to work side by side, Black Lives Matter and all these, and Occupy Wall Street and all these other new vibrant groups that are growing up. We need to work side by side mm-hmm. and help them. Mm-hmm. I tried to call when Occupy Wall Street was in Chicago. I tried to call their office.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm going, this is a day for a demonstration. I can't get through. But I knew better. Mm-hmm. I knew it was COINTELPRO.
Yeah.
So if the demonstration dwindled in Chicago, it's because they had something to do with it.
So
they messed up the phone. You couldn't even call their office. Wow.
Based on what you see, you know, as an expert and as living history, really, as someone who's been a part of these movements, do you see some of those similar tactics being taken today to break down the civil rights, these activist organizations that we have growing and bubbling today?
Exactly. And that's why, just like that example that I was trying to say, is if we know that COINTELPRO is not there, they just have different names.
Yeah, switch it up.
Then I guess we're going to have two or three offices or places to call. Mm-hmm. For people to be involved, or we need to be, you know, we need to take that into consideration. Always take the fact that you're not working in a vacuum. You know, that mm-hmm. there's other people there trying to destroy your movement. You're trying to change society. You have Trump everywhere.
Hey, but your city, you know, Chicago shut him down last night.
Yeah, Chicago shut him down. They know Chicago been through a lot. They know we've been with Daley. So that's why the Chicago shut him down quickly. But we need to do the same thing. We need to be prepared because that's what we're fighting. Mm-hmm. We're fighting the Trumps and people like that, the Klan.
Okay, and so maybe again, just to keep it in the present today, what have you been up to lately?
Lately we have in our annual event, we have a student organization here. I'm still in school.
Yeah.
I'm a non-traditional student, and I'm going for my master's now. So we have March 29th, 2016. We have an upcoming event. We were able to support the archives. We have 120 oral histories that I did.
Can you tell them where?
Of the neighborhood of Lincoln Park in Chicago. Okay. So that we kind of recreated that community. But it's important that we recreated a Latino neighborhood that was displaced. It's the largest Latino archive in the Midwest.
Wow.
That's important. But more important, it's that it was the birthplace of the Young Lords movement. And we need to really respect that. Everybody, it doesn't matter what city we're from. This is the birthplace of the Young Lords movement, Lincoln Park, which was completely displaced. So we're honored that we were completely displaced.
Okay.
Because it shows that we were in struggle. And so every year we do this event to promote the archives because they don't want the archives. Right. You know, the government does not want the archives. So that we have to have a group just to promote that. And that's why we have the Young World Student Organization, which Carlos Martinez is our advisor. And I appreciate being talking here with him. So we have that event coming up. We have some salsa music.
It's taking place at Grand Valley State University.
Soul Syndicate is taking place at Grand Valley State University. We have the president of the university speaking with us, the vice president of inclusion and equity. So it's two deans, the dean of liberal studies and the dean of university libraries. The director of Kent District Library is going to be there. So, you know, we have a good group here that's supporting us, and we want your support, too.
And the beauty of it is you're also bringing in members from the community. Now,
We're bringing a few busloads of the communities to mingle with the faculty and the students of Grand Valley.
Now, as we start wrapping things up here, I do also want to let everybody know, I have it in my notes here, for those who want to access the archives, want to see some of the work, the oral history project that Chacha's been working on so hard for a long time, you can go to www.gvsu.edu/younglords and you'll be able to access all the interviews. This interview is in a podcast, but down the line we're going to add this to the oral history project as well as so a big part of this is just documenting history and taking control of our narrative again. Later on this year, Chacha's also told me that he should be completing a book as well, where you'll hear a lot of the interesting stories that we've spoken about today. You can get it in a book format. So everyone who's a fan of La Verdad, everybody who, you know, likes this podcast, we want to make sure that you support Chacha, you buy the book, because it's not just going, you know, towards money in his pockets. This will be a way to continue the oral history project. This will be a way to support an individual who's done a lot for our community over the years.
Yeah, and
thank you.
And also on behalf of La Verdad, I wanted to say thank you for joining us here today. And mi gente that are listening right now, remember that we always speak La Verdad, hablando La Verdad, and we want to keep it at that. So I definitely, from the bottom of my heart, say thank you. And Carlos and I have been talking about this for a while. So we have a legend here. And we were able to get this into a podcast. So Chacha, thank you so much for sitting in with us and talking to us.
Thank you, Christian and Carlos. I really appreciate this very much.
So
the support.
Thank you for listening to Hablando La Verdad. We'll definitely be keeping in touch with some more oral history of what's happening in Chicago and all over the U.S. in regards to Latino. We'll be right back.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.